This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. We might have a new president of the USA. We do have a new lockdown, but the English Football League keeps going just like it did way back in 1888. I wonder who was presenting the official EFL podcast back then. Not one, but a first two defeats of the season for Reading. Bournemouth also losing their unbeaten record. And not one, but a first two wins of the season for Wycombe Wanderers. All change on the official EFL podcast. Well, what a brilliant week it's been on the pitch for Wycombe Wanderers, having picked up just a single point from the first eight games. In the last 7 days, they've collected another six. The shame is that manager Gareth Ainsworth missed both of their first wins of the season, recovering from a back operation. And I'm sure I'm not the first to say this to you, Gaz. Do you think you should stay away a bit more often?
Listen, if it gets results for Wycombe Wanderers, I'll do what it takes. You know me. No, it's been fantastic. A real good week. It's been coming over four or five games now. It's not just the last two, although the last two have produced the goods, or the last three, really, the draw against Watford as well. But, you know, Norwich game and the Reading game, teams that really are good sides in the Championship, we've more than matched them. And honestly, referees' decisions, I don't want to go on, but I think we've got this little club syndrome where it doesn't really matter if you don't give it against Wycombe Wanderers. And that's how we're feeling at the moment. So some of these decisions hopefully will start coming around and we'll get them back at the other end of the season. But no, the boys have been phenomenal. I've watched the games. Mega frustrated, by the way, watching it on the internet. But they've done me proud. Really good results.
Well, listen, so many questions. I mean, I think having an operation, missing games in the middle of a season is not something a manager takes lightly and happens very rarely. What happened, mate? I don't think I know the detail about this. Where are you in your life? What's going on?
It's a warning for anyone who's got any back pain, because I was, I think it's just 47 and the amount of training and games I've played. I've always had little back injuries and little back issues where I'll do me back now again. And people will know what I'm saying here. You do your back by bending down and then a couple of days later it's gone. You've had a couple of ibuprofens and it's gone. And really you shouldn't ignore that, because what that is your body saying, look, there's something wrong in here, get it checked out. Because I was feeling great on the day of the Watford game, did a session in the gym, ran up the stairs at the training ground, and as I went up the stairs, as I always do, the life and soul and the energy of the training ground, something popped really, really bad in my back. Something popped, and it was like, wow, that wasn't good. And straight away, it wasn't a problem. I did that game that night, the Watford game on TV, and the interviewers were saying, oh, we know you've got a bad back, we know you're struggling. And I was walking around very gingerly. I wasn't, first time I've ever sat down, I think, on a bench for any game. And then the next day and the next day after that, it just got worse and worse. I had a scan. They said, look, you need an operation on the Wednesday. And we said, right, let's book that operation in as soon as we can. We've got the international break coming. We'll do it then. And on the Thursday, Clem, total collapse, paralysis in my left leg. It's not a nice thing to describe to people, but I was lying on the living room floor here and I couldn't move. I couldn't move. What had happened was a prolapse disc had become detached and went into my spinal cord. And so it was a serious issue that I called on our fabulous NHS. Again, I was clapping them for the COVID. I can clap them even more now because they've saved me. They came ambulance into hospital, Royal Berkshire in Reading. And within 12 hours, I'm having surgery to remove this disc from the spinal cord. And it was a real tough one, you know, a couple of hours operation, but all fit and good now. Still a bit numb down the left leg, but you know, thank goodness they found it, they stopped it and they saved it. So yeah, anyone who's got back problems, go and get it checked out, because I tell you what, you don't want to go through what I went through.
I mean, I haven't ever had anything as serious as that, but I did have a couple of years ago. It just went on the train. I remember I was going up to Newcastle to see John Joe Shelby for BBC's Football Focus, and it just went. And when I got to Newcastle Station, I could not get out of my seat. I did it, packed myself with ibuprofen, got to the training ground. I could not move in the interview, got back. And then the following morning, I just couldn't get out of bed. It's a scary place to be, guys,
so
isn't it?
Debilitating, and it's the back. I mean, you can isolate a knee or you can isolate an ankle, but your back, once that goes, that's everything. That's your body gone, you know. And like I say, if it keeps happening to people, like it did with me, same with me, Clem. I'd turn around, pick something up, I go, oh, and it would go for a couple of days, I'd be feeling it. And this is your discs, we've all got these things, but get them checked out because that was nasty, that. But the upside is I'm all good now, and I am mobile, and I'm thinking about making the trip this Saturday, but I think the chairman's trying to lock me doors and steal the keys and keep me at home for this one. So
yeah, well, in your own best interests, I'm sure, and I'm sure family are concerned about you as well, because we all know what you like and we all know you'll try and push it. But I guess you will really come into your own later in the season, where we need you firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, and he did say that, Clem. I mean, you've reiterated what the chairman said. He said your energy is, he said, don't think it's just these two games you're not there. He said that the boys have got your energy, that spirit you've created. We're going to need that right through the season. So if you have to miss two or three, then we have to miss two or three. But you know what I'm like, and I'm just itching to be there, honestly. It's crazy.
So the operation was on which day of the week? The Friday?
Last Friday,
The Friday. So you were able to get home in time to watch the boys get the first win?
No, I watched it in hospital. So
on your iPad, in a sort of general ward, or what?
On my iPhone. So now my eyes have gone now because I'm trying to squint at this iPhone. But it was on the iPhone. I'd come round. I was pumped full of codeine and whatever else you need to keep the pain away. But no, we went through the tactics on the Thursday. I was still in total contact with my assistant. I was ringing my analyst during the game, and so it's. You know,
ringing your analyst during the game from your hospital bed, still coming out of your anaesthetic, straining your eyes, trying to influence it from a hospital bed. Were you on a general ward with about three or four other beds in there, or did they put you in room?
I was lucky I had a little side room there because, I don't know what I was saying, but I'm sure it was gibberish to some people. But no, I was... I remember ringing the analyst at half time and saying, look, midfield looks a little bit leggy. I said, we're looking a little bit leggy in midfield. And Josh, my analyst, said, Richard Dobson, my assistant, he said, Dobbo's mentioned that. And within 10 minutes, he took one of our midfielders off and replaced him. And I thought, do you know what? I'd have done that. So it just signs that out together, the 9 years that we've been together from me in charge, we just think the same anyway, you know. So I'm in total trust of what's going on. But I don't know. I can't recall too many conversations that day, but I remember a 1-0 win, and that got us off the mark in the championship.
So by the time we came round to the midweek win at Birmingham, were you able to influence and interfere that little bit more? I mean, I got to reflect as well, because Paul Warne talked about he had to COVID isolate and watched in his man shed and things. And he said that the pictures were about 45 seconds later than the relay was getting down the phone line from the game.
I've got a great story from last night. So we get to the week and with the build up to Birmingham. And again, on the Tuesday, I'm FaceTiming Dobbo, and he's got his FaceTime pointed at the tactics board behind him, and was moving these counters about. And so we picked the team together, we picked the tactics, and on a true story, and he's saying, what about this and what about that? I'm saying, yep. So we get to, I mean, it's always together. I always have the final say on everything, no matter what, but there's always a debate, and I like to be challenged. So he's saying this. And so we settle on a team. We get the team out there, and pretty much the same team. They get out there. And then on the night, obviously, Richard's—he's the one there. He's on the—he's touchline. If he feels anything, I give him my blessing to make subs and do what he feels is right on the night, because we've been together so long. So, anyway, we go 1-0 down. Obviously, first half. So I ring Josh again, because Dobbo's got this headpiece in and he's directly linked to Josh. So I can ring Josh rather than ringing Dobbo and him having a phone on the touchline, which looks a bit rubbish. I ring Josh, direct feed into him. So I run Josh half time. We're talking about the tactics, and we changed again, and we get back in it. And I don't know if you know the game, but last night we were at Birmingham. Akin Fenwa was just sat on the edge of their box. We were just pumping balls into him, and everything was sticking, and Birmingham couldn't get out. And it was a great performance, a great Wickham performance second half, and we were playing. So I ring him about I don't know, 85 minutes or something. Or and I'm, I said, I rang him earlier in the after. I said, keep it going, Josh. I said, just tell Dobbo, don't change anything. Keep this going. I can feel it. I don't know if you can see what I'm seeing on the screen, but this is looking good. We're going to nick something. And Josh just goes, it's in, Gaffer. And I'm watching the screen and there's nothing happening. And I'm thinking, what the hell are you talking about? Like, there's nothing happening here. And then 45 seconds later, I see it all on the screen. So that's like a bit of an anti-climax now because I know we've scored. And he's going, yeah, it's in, Gaffer. It's counted. The referees give it. And I'm going, what? Just show me. So it was honestly a brilliant moment that Josh is this 22 to 23-year-old analyst. He's been absolutely brilliant, but his enthusiasm. And I'm wondering now what the other people next to him were thinking, that he's shouting, screaming now that it's in, Gaffer, it's in. And it, I mean, what a finish to the game, you know, last minute winner. Can't get any better. And yeah, really pleased.
I mean, it puts a completely different complexion on the first quarter of a season, does it not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I mean, we knew that this would be a season of discovering and exploring the Championship as Wycombe Wanderers. And we haven't gone crazy with the money. There's been so many horror stories, Clem, of teams that have gone up and have gone, right, we're going to stay here. We're going to pay as much as we possibly can and some to stay in this Championship, because that's where it is. Not us, you know, not us. We've assembled a squad on probably the lowest. I mean, Burton obviously were there a couple of years ago, but I'd say we'd be rivaling their budget, lower maybe. We're a lot lower than every other team in there, but we've assembled this squad with a bit of patience and a little bit of holding your nerve as well, because you're worried and you're thinking, I need that player, I need that big player. Hold your nerve and it'll come. You know, we signed Gareth McCleary recently just outside the window. He was a free agent, so they are available if you do it right. But we've assembled this squad on such a budget. We were worried at first, thinking we got stuffed 5-0 at Blackburn. We Swansea beat us 2-0 and we're very, very much the better team. And we're thinking, we're way short here. But you know what? That was the boys working out what they need, and they've upped their levels. It's amazing how they've upped their levels to the Championship. Players like Curtis Thompson, who told he wasn't good enough to play in League Two, has upped his level. He's now one of the top midfielders in the Championship. Akin Fenwick apparently won more headers last night than he's broke a record or something in a game for the Championship. And they're stepping up, Clem. And then first seven games, okay, seven defeats. I got a great text actually from Darren Ferguson after those first, the Peterborough manager, who that club was the main rivals to us last season when we got promoted. And there was Darren text me on after a seventh defeat and said, when I got promoted with Peterborough 3 or 4 years ago, I said, we lost our first seven and we got 53 points and stayed up. Just keep doing what you believe in. And I thought that was an unbelievable text from somebody who, I mean, I've got a hell of a lot of respect for him. His dad had managed against him, lucky enough to do that once. And to have that, just, you need it sometimes as a manager. I don't care who you are. You need that sometimes. And that was just, do you know what? He's right. I'm not going to change. We're going to do what we keep believing in. And the next game was a draw. The next two have been wins. And we're going to keep doing what we believe in. And he's right. And I'm not going to wane from that. And this is this results now. It's not about the points. It's about us now going, we know what we are. We know what we are. And we know what it's going to take. And we believe we can stay in this Championship.
I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it? Because you don't want to tell your players, and you probably don't want to tell yourself, that you're going to hit the wall, that the stretch of Wycombe has been so far, that being used to winning or not losing every week is going to be exchanged for more defeats across the course of the season, probably a lot more than you are used to. So you don't, you want to prepare your players, but you don't actually want to say that to them and put it in their heads that losing's acceptable. It's a very difficult line to walk.
It is, but as, again, we've been performance-based for a long time, Clem, you know, and it's difficult. It really is difficult to look through results and go, performance was there, keep doing that because it can't keep happening. But I think one of my biggest strengths now is, my biggest strength is that I've been in charge for so long, I've had so many games, and the trust is there from Wycombe for me that I can look at performance now rather than result. I'm not one of these under pressure who's got to get the results straight away. You know, we've done a job there. We're so pleased and so proud of what we've done at Wycombe. We're hoping that people see performance, because we certainly do now, and it is hard sometimes because you do need results. And after seven defeats, of course, I was looking, going, where is this result coming from? But I knew Reading game and the Norwich game, the performances were there, and I thought, this coming, it's coming. And you know, it's nice when it does, but you have to keep believing and keep that strength about you, which not a lot of people have got. Some start blaming other people, some start blaming their players. It's hard. You've got to stay, and you've got to stay calm and focused all the time.
Listen, guys, just to finish, we've got to reflect on the current situation. The country is back in lockdown for at least a month. I mean, business goes on in terms of elite football, but nevertheless, you've got a squad of players that are human beings, got families to look after. They'll have the same anxieties as the rest of society. How are you going to deal with that over the space of the next few weeks?
Yeah, very similar to you know, how we did last time. I mean, it's a little bit different. The schools are open, so that, you know, there's a little bit more movement. It's tough, you know, and we've always focused on the mental side of players, the psychological side of players being really, really important. And even going to the coffee shop or something like that's going to be taken away from them for a month. And these routines that we're going to have to try and get them into the routine of being professional footballers. Still, we've got an away game on Saturday. We're going to a hotel. How's that going to work? You know, I think the food arrangements are maybe room service only or something like that this time. We're going to have to adapt. It's something we're good at, but to be able to do it, you've got to be strong in your mind. And that's why we've worked really hard on the psychological side of the football. You know, I know you did a big thing on the diploma for us, the football management diploma, and it talked a lot about that mental side, more than the tactics, more than 4-4-2, more than can you cross that ball right. The mental side is becoming so huge in football now, and if you can get that right, I think you've got a key to unlock a huge door. And I really think at Wickham we're on the way to getting that right.
I don't know whether to say I'm pleased you've had such a great week, or to empathise about your personal plight and the back injury and all the sort of personal trauma that you've been through. Don't overdo it. If you do need that extra rest, miss one more game. The boys will win anyway because they're doing quite fine without you, and then you'll have the international break to fully rest. Don't overdo it, mate, okay?
I won't do, Clark. I've got to come back at some stage, but I know what you mean, and if I have to watch one more on the screen, I will do.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know, all eyes now, having heard this, are going to be looking at Josh and what he's up to on the touchline, aren't they? Because they'll know he's in full communication with you. Rest up, recuperate. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, guys. Brilliant.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
So, mention the name Chris Wood in football circles, and I'm sure an image of Burnley centre forward most probably comes to mind. But there is another with connections to the game. He's a Plymouth Argyle fan. He's even been known to summarise on their games for local radio, except that this Chris Wood is more famously known as the drummer with stadium-filling rock band Bastille. And that kind of course, leads me to, have you ever been mistaken for him?
For Chris Wood? No, I mean, yeah. my Kiwi accent's pretty poor at the best of times, so not quite. Although, growing up, everyone thought I was called Chris Woods because of the Sheffield Wednesday goalkeeper. Constantly correcting my surname.
Yeah.
Growing up.
As I asked that question, I realised that probably I'm the only person that could possibly have the phone numbers for the pair of you in my phone. And literally, yeah, as we were setting up you joining us, I had to make sure I sent the right one to Dave, our producer.
It's pretty niche.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, you could have some of those conversations, couldn't you? It's like over football over the years. I think there's two prominent Mick Jones, and one of them has a connection to Plymouth, actually. I think Mick Jones, was he assistant to Neil Warnock?
Well, it was Mick Jones and it was Kevin Blackwell together, like two assistants.
Yeah, yeah. But there was a Mick Jones who was a centre forward for Leeds United in their absolute heyday as well in the 1970s. So that was nearly a nasty accident, Woody, as well, yeah, that I had to encounter. Just take us through your support of Plymouth then. Early days, obviously Plymouth boy. What are your earliest memories?
So my dad, my uncle and my grandfather all like died in the war greens, so it was less of a choice, more of like a family calling expectation. But no, I mean, I grew up, so I was football obsessed anyway growing up, and dad took me to my first game. I think I would have been six I think it was like 3-2 lost at home to Blackburn back in the day.
What kind of year is this, Chris?
This was 92-93 season,
okay,
I think.
Okay,
but
yeah.
My first full season was 93-94 season under Peter Shilton, where we had a run at the playoffs. Got knocked out by Burnley in the semis, which to this day still breaks my heart. And yeah, ever since then, I was a season ticket holder up to like age of 19 when I left home to try and pursue music. So yeah, I was there. Like my final full season at home was the Paul Sturrock second promotion season. So we had a run of going up from then Division 3, Division 2, and then promoted to the Championship under Paul Sturrock.
So this is Thundershot, Paul Watton's era, all these kind of
yes.
guys in that team.
Oh, captain, my captain, yeah. He's, Mr. Plymouth is what's yeah. And it's funny because like with being in the band now, there's kind of like players I kind of grew up watching, and I end up chatting to some of them. They ask me for tickets and stuff like that, so it's really weird.
Oh, it's a nice reciprocal agreement, is it? I mean, I love this kind of blend with lives and things. There's so many questions I want to ask you. But was there a tipping point, if you loved football, where you thought, could I be any good at this as a player, but music got hold of you?
No, I mean, I had county trials as a goalkeeper when I was 11, but I must have been yeah. like 5 foot, if that. So I just kept on getting lobbed, and that was pretty much the end of my keeping career.
Yeah.
The kind of most serious game I've ever played in was a couple of years ago. They had the game for Grenfell charity game, so I played half an hour in that, and my God, I was just done in by the end of that. So I ended up playing left back for a bit, with Clint Hill just screaming at me to get up, get back, get up, get back. And you know, like in your head, when you're thinking, right, if like, the ball comes to me, I'll just take a touch and I'll just lay it off. But you're so knackered when it comes to you, you can't even think. You just end up just shinning it off in some random direction. But no, I'm not the most gifted of footballers, but I do love playing. And in normal times, I'll be playing like 5-a-side or 7-a-side, like midweek.
And have you ever been in a stadium when one of your own tracks has come on, and if so, what on earth does that feel like?
So for a period, Argyle were playing Pompeii before kickoff, which I don't think went there too well, because so historically we always play Semper Fidelis as the team comes out, which for me, like I hear that, I'm instantly transported to like 5-3 on a Saturday at Home Park. Yeah. So yeah, I don't think that went down too well. So when it came on, I just kind of had my head in my hands a little bit, just trying to hide.
Oh, but, okay.
Yeah, it's funny. But that, I mean, the fact anyone cares is a massive privilege, but I think there's a time and a place.
Yeah. You mentioned that track. I was once fortunate enough to interview one of Spandau Ballet, and I managed to do a big chunk of it in their song titles. And then I was thinking of trying to pull off a similar feat with you, but unless they brought back the Anglo-Italian Cup or something and you drew Pompeii in that competition, or you signed called Icarus, I'm going to struggle, aren't I?
This is it. Like, yeah, we try to amuse ourselves a little bit, just trying to put in film titles here and there during a long promo campaign. But yeah, I'm fully into that idea.
How do you maintain your support and enthusiasm from a distance? And I guess this is a problem that a lot of EFL clubs have got at the moment, that, you know, we are a much more migratory workforce, let alone being a rock star who's going all over the world. So, you know, have you got the old sort of, the kind of feed that the EFL do? You can watch games wherever you are in the world, etc.
Yeah. So I use iFollow. I was using that anyway for like before this, and because when you're outside the country, you can actually watch the live stream still. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of, as I say, like I grew up with it, and for me, it's as much about, because like kind of missing home as well. So yeah, when Argyle do well, it's kind of, it represents the city, it's like not just the team. So I get very I've got very little patience for these sort of plastic fans who are like dyed in the wool Man U fans, but have never lived further north than Torquay. I mean, so yeah, when it's your team, especially lower league teams, like when you win, that literally makes your week pretty much. So yeah, as I say, I live in Brighton now, and I don't mind if Brighton do well. I've got lots of mates who are Brighton fans, but if Brighton get done 10-0, it's not going to change my mood. If Argyle lose 1-0, I want to smash the TV up. So as far as following it, it's a bit tricky. So like on the US tour last year, I was having to kind of set alarms to get up at like 8 o'clock, not to miss kickoff and that sort of thing. which after a 2 a.m. finish was a little bit tough.
Have you ever had any of those moments where you got a really euphoric end to the show? You filled a massive, gigantic US stadium. You've just splatted Pompeii out as the encore. The adrenaline's pumping. You're absolutely pumped up and you're going, get out of the way, lads. I've got to just find out what happened in the second half at Shrewsbury.
Well, I've had that a few times. And so obviously not football related, but like even during Cricket World Cup, like we were on stage like during the Super Over, that sort of stuff. So I've got the crew feeding back to me like in my ears whilst playing the songs like Ball by Ball. It's like, Super Over, it's hit Ben Stokes. I'm like, what's going on? Well, we're trying to play the song.
Wow. So, love your enthusiasm and how you know it holds firm, because it becomes more of a challenge if you're not going week in, week out. Your relationship with football changes and you have to keep re-educating yourself about when Luke Jepcott is pulled back from his loan spell and chucked straight in the team and gets off to a roaring start.
Absolute dream start for it. But also, it's funny, so going around the world, just obviously football means different things in the different countries, but we once ruined Beck's set in Texas, because we were, so there's this thing where in America, kind of pre-Christmas time, they have these like, kind of like the old Radio 1 Roadshow, where you get all the big acts. And they do like a sort of like a 1 day festival, but they always do it around Christmas time, so you're darting all over the country. And we were playing down in Dallas and at FC Dallas's stadium, and basically down there, no one can care less about football or soccer. And we were like, "Can we use your training pitch just to have a kick around?" They're like, fine. So they've disappeared. Came back 5 minutes later, gave us all shirts, footballs, a lot. Like, we can't believe you guys like football. So we're there playing, they turn on the floodlights for us, but we didn't realise that in the stadium next door, Beck had this sort of really dark part of his set where the lights go down, it's really intimate, and all you get is just these blaring floodlights coming in and ruining the whole thing. So, I don't think he was best pleased with us.
Oh, fantastic. And these mad Englishmen roaming around the place. Listen, what miracles Ryan Lowe has performed, and... You know what? I've known him a lot of years, Woody. I'd never have realised he could have put his imprint not just on Bury, but to have been then transported so far away from home. And his enthusiasm and his warmth and his charisma just seems to have given the whole club a big lift.
I think he's brilliant. Been fortunate enough to meet him a couple of times, and yeah, he's a really sound guy. And I think he just believes in what he's doing. Also, like, you can just tell, I mean, I'm obsessed with teams like a bit lower down, not on necessarily big money, just the belief in the players and just the man management. You can get like so much more out of your team and everything like that. But I also think maybe the geography weirdly helps us. So it's been a hindrance in terms of signing players, where I know that we were trying to sign some big name players, but they just wouldn't come this far south.
Yeah.
Or you have to end up paying like a third as much wages again to get them down. But on the flip side, when you're travelling together the whole time, it's like a lot more time together as a team, the camaraderie. You're not getting players driving in from different parts of the country for training. Like, they're all together, so they're more of a unit. I guess that sort of breeds a bit of kind of cohesion and camaraderie. But also, like, so we historically have got this really good relationship. We've had this run of like Scottish managers over like the last few decades. I think, again, being so far from home, It's quite galvanising. So maybe it's a similar thing being that far from Merseyside for Ryan Lowe.
Yeah, heck of a job he's done. Heck of a job. I mean, 11th season since you were last in the Championship. I'm guessing that's got to be the prize you've got in your sights to get up and try and stay there.
Yeah, I mean, Championship, I think, is kind of our level. We just got our stadium finished now as well, which looks amazing. So I think we're a Championship level club. But yeah, slowly but surely, let's not gamble at all.
I'm going to say the date 2020, the year 2020. I mean, can you put into words what it's been like?
Better luck next year, I guess. I mean, as far as, well, say as the band are concerned, I think we're quite fortunate. Like, this was going to be an off year for us anyway. It's just the way it lined up with album cycles and whatnot. So we've not had any kind of great sort of hardship thrust upon us, but I know there are bands out there who, well, either but big ones who would have spent, so like when you book in, say, festivals, you don't just say pack your gear up the week before and you go. Months in advance you're spending money on production and set design and all these sorts of things, and like people would have spent like a lot of money, and now all their shows have been cancelled, so they're down. I also really feel for bands this year who would have had their breakout year. So people don't quite often realise how important festivals are. One, financially, because that's like generally where most bands make their money for the year. But also it's where people would actually kind of join the dots. Like they might have heard your song on radio, but they don't know who the band is that plays it. So when they actually see you, they're like, oh, it's that band. Or that's where that song comes from. So there's a lot of people who would have built up this momentum the last 2 or 3 years for their careers, and this would have been their crossover summer, and it's been taken away. So I really hope there's not like some like lost year or two of artists and new talent who should have kind of crossed over and had a lot more success. So I think when gigs do come back, everyone's going to be gagging to go. I mean, I know I am.
A bit like football as well, I guess, Chris, isn't it? You know, that when everybody's finally allowed to go and enjoy a normal match day, then the lid is really going to come off. So the tracks you've released this year, and you've had a couple of songs out, there was the Graham Coxon one in the summer, and you had one about a month ago. Are they a sort of byproduct of lockdown, or were they already in work?
Like they weren't done from scratch, but like, I mean, we're always working. Dan's always writing. I'm lucky to have a little studio at home, so I can record stuff remotely as well. We never really stop, to be honest. And obviously, our job is to make music and release music, so we'll keep on doing that. But I think, especially now, just offering a little bit of escapism as well is probably quite important. I don't think everyone wants the pandemic like rammed down their throat repeatedly, so. If we could offer a little temporary distraction, I think that's probably quite an important job too.
But I also happen to think that the way in which you got together with Dan and the way in which the sort of nucleus of the band was formed could be an inspiration to people out there who are maybe struggling at the moment. Would you just mind sharing where you were in your life and how a fortuitous event happened, just as a seed of inspiration for those that might not be feeling great at the moment?
Sure. So I've moved to London in 2007-08, and I was working temp jobs in the daytime and then trying to do music in the evening, and it was just breaking me, basically trying to live two lives at once, and just it didn't add up. So my dad actually suggested, like, well, if you need to make money for music, then you need to like think of ways outside of gigging to do it initially. So he thought of going around to teaching drums. I was like, okay, I can do that. So we had about 2,000 flyers made up, and I mean, I still got a box of them somewhere in my garage. But we went round, like, must have done about 1,000 houses, like, in and around like Wimbledon sort of way, where I was living at the time. And I got 2 students and 1 phone call out of those 1,000. But the phone call was from a kid who lived about 3 roads down the road. And he was like, I need a drummer. He thought I was going to be some old boy, and he's like, have you got any students I could like recommend? He's like, well, I'm 22, mate. I'll be in your band. And I met Dan that way. And we played together and picked up Will and Carl along the way for like about 2 years before like Bastille went and started. And it was just one of those things. But I'd say to anyone like listening, like, obviously right now is not great, but we will come out the other side of it. And if anyone is pursuing whatever it is, sports, arts, any sort of like calling or vocation, like, it'll be the last ones standing that end up succeeding still. So you just got to keep on, and it will get easier, and you will get your rewards at the end of it. It might not feel like it right now.
Inspiring words and an inspiring story that we never know when our life is going to change and in what way. Can you imagine if there'd been a little yappy dog at that particular door or something you could hear, and you thought, I'm not going up that garden path, not put that leaflet through that letterbox.
Exactly, yeah. Sliding doors sort of moment, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, it's mad.
Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure. We really appreciate you joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Not at all, guys. Thanks for having me.
This is the official EFL podcast.
As the Sky Bet Championship League 1 and League 2 reach their quarterway point, who better to help us wrap up the last week and also look ahead to the push towards the international break than a striker who had 2 spells with Cardiff City. He also played for West Brom, Norwich City, Derby County, Nottingham Forest, and a game for Blackpool. Robbie Earnshaw is also the only player to have scored a hat-trick in the Premier League, all 3 EFL divisions, the League Cup, the FA Cup, and at senior level 2. In his case, for Wales. Where are those seven balls. Have you got a shrine to Robbie Earnshaw with a big long glass cabinet above your mantelpiece, and do you look at them and give them a little wave every day?
Yes, that's exactly it. You know, with my throne and no, listen, it's well, especially the last 8 years, I've been in America, I've been in Canada, so I've been in Israel, so really I've spent a lot of time out of the country, so I really need to get like some kind of cabinet trophy, you know, for the balls and you know, put them on display a little bit. But right now they're safe and just enjoyed.
Yeah, let me be perfectly clear. Your balls need to be on display, Robbie Earnshaw. There's no doubt about that. I hate all that when I hold something like that in such reverence, and then you go, oh yeah, it's in the garage, it's next to me Mrs. Old Sheepskin Coat, she's going to get out for the winter. I don't know, that stuff's to be really treasured.
Listen, they're one of the most important things in my life, because it shows an item or items that shows a hat trick ball is a symbol of years, hours, training field, study, video, how you do this, how you do that, you know, so each one represents a lot of hours in my head, you know, so when I think about, you know, each match ball, I'm thinking about countless hours of practice and messing up, you know, lots of times in training to be able to get that one ball, because it's all about repetition and all the study that I put in for years and years. So each one represents, you know, so much. So I hold them dearly.
Do you define yourself as, well, actually, let me ask you, what do you define yourself as? A sort of top two division striker, as a sort of stalwart championship striker? Where do you see yourself when you look back on your career?
Well, it's interesting, because I think I would have loved more of an opportunity closer to the top and top teams, but I played, you know, I played in the Premier League. I played a lot in the Championship, but also played, you know, regarded as the highest level is international. So really, it's not for me to define, because I played at all those levels and played against the very, very top players. I mean, the very best. See, in my position, I always think about it as this way. In the art of goal scoring, it was about, it doesn't matter who you're playing up against. It doesn't matter, you know, played against Cannavaro and Nesta, you know, playing against John Terry, Cavallio, Rio Ferdinand, Vidic. It was about, you know, and scored against different top players. So that's what it was about. It's not so much where should I, that's the level. It's the level that you're aiming to achieve at and do it at. So, you know, I scored against some top players. So that's how I always think about it in that way.
So listen, unbeaten before the weekend in the Championship, Reading lost two in a row. The second to Presnew themselves made it four consecutive away wins. In the same week, they recorded their fifth consecutive home defeat. Bournemouth also suffered their first defeat. As we've already heard, Wycombe Wanderers got their first couple of wins. Sheffield Wednesday's points deduction for breaking spending rules was reduced from 12 to 6 by an independent panel. And Ivan Toney became the first Championship striker to reach 10 plus goals at this point in a season since Charlie Austin in 2012. So as you study the anatomy of a striker with regards to your own career, you must look at somebody like Ivan Toney and absolutely purr, Robbie.
Yeah, and you know what? I always think about you know, the qualities that the striker brings and why they get in themselves in those positions. You know, so when I look at a striker, for instance, I'm looking at, okay, how's his movement? You know, is he got intelligent movement? Because anybody can move, everybody, you know, all the players run around. Yes, do they run around? But what space do they run into? What's the intention behind the movement? You know, so those little things. And then also, obviously, the technique, the consistency of their technique. Can they finish when they get into those positions? And, you know, obviously, you're seeing it with him. And and good for him, because I think, you know, Brentford, good team. But I think they're becoming confident. Because, but also, when you come into a team and that's confident, I think it gives you so much more. A team that's going to create chances, a team that will, when you make the movement, it's going to deliver. So I think those are the key things that you're looking at.
Yeah, it's a key change though for Brentford, isn't it? Because they had BMW last season and Buemo, Benrahma and Watkins, and now very much led by one man. Although I should also point out that Marcus Fors as well has been very productive. 4 goals in 111 minutes, hasn't even made a start yet. But suddenly there's a very much a focus of their attack as opposed to a focus of three of them in the previous season.
Yeah, I think, you know, the challenge was always, you know, when Ollie Watkins leaves, is who comes in, but also how do they adapt to that situation? I think they're more now spread in their ability to win games. You know, it's not just like, you know, like front three obviously stood out last year, but now I think they're a team that can go get goals, get chances, create lots of chances from different angles, different areas. So I think that's what you kind of, they've adapted to. It'll be interesting if they carry on, because I think as you go into, you know, especially January, February, and when you start to, you know, depending on the positions that you're in, can you, are you adjusting, you know, because teams figure you out after a certain amount of time. So how do they adapt to that? And how do they go up to the next level? Because, you know, when you're trying to go to the Premier League, you need that next level, next jump, and the next tactic, you know, when teams figure you out.
Let me chuck a few of your former teams at you and see what your reaction is. Norwich City, first of all, sitting in third at the moment. What are your thoughts so far this season?
Very good. I think they look confident. They look like a team that's ready to go back up. I think that's the best way. I think when you have especially when you look at Pukki, their goal scorer, and I think he leads them from the front. Not in you know, running around everywhere, but in what he does. He's consistent. He will score goals. You give him half a chance, he's going to finish. And somebody you can consistently rely on. But also, what he does is he gets in positions that helps everybody else around. I think they're a good team. And I think, you know, they've lost a couple of players as well that they've sold on. But I think they're a strong enough team, individually and as a team, to go back up. I think they're going to be strong. I think they'll be still be favourites in 6 months' time.
More than Watford, more than Bournemouth, the other two teams that came down?
Well, I actually see, right now especially, I see probably Norwich and Watford probably being stronger at the minute than Bournemouth. Because I think with Bournemouth, you had a real change because obviously Eddie Howe leaving is a big thing. But I think Watford, I think they're capable, and I think they're going to feel like, okay, we're targeting going straight back up. But also Norwich will be in the same way. And I think, listen, Bournemouth are a good team, good players, and they're a very, very good club. I think they will be capable of it. But I think Norwich and Watford will be more confident in what they're doing at the minute.
Forest, marked improvement under Chris Hughton. Derby County, not the season they would have wished for.
Disaster.
Speculation about the manager a lot at the moment. He's coming under real scrutiny now, Philip Cuckoo, isn't he?
Well, I think when you have your best players, Wayne Rooney, but you don't consistently have him, I think it puts a dent in what they try to do and how they try to play. But I think with all the pressure from, you know, is Cuckoo here, is leaving, we have to go up, all of those, I think it brings a sense of unsettlement within, you know, because the players hear it, the manager hears it, the staff hear it, the people around the club hear it. So it brings that sense of unsettlement. And I think that's what you're having is the pressure. Because don't forget, with Derby, it's not just this season. It's the last, you know, 4 or 5 seasons that they've been, okay, is this the year that they should do better? Is this the year that they should do better? And unfortunately, you're now 4 or 5 years down the line of that. And that's the mounting pressure.
Yeah, but Forest, even longer since they've been in the top flight, but definitely, definitely on the move under Chris Hughton.
Yeah, Chris Hughton is a really top guy, is an excellent coach, a guy who, I think he understands it. He gets, you know, how to stabilize a club, how to, you know, bring the best out of his players. He's a guy who's actually, you know, recently I've got to speak to, you know, before he actually got the Forest job. So, obviously, you know, me doing my UEFA Pro license with the Wales FA, he was kind enough to pick up the phone and answer a few questions, give some advice, and I got to know his, you know, just his ways and how he kind of goes about his business and being a manager. So it was interesting to hear that, get some advice from him. So he's a good guy. So I can understand why that they would pick up, why they would start to win, why they would, you know, pick up in their form as well.
So Saturday's fixtures, Reading Stoke is the 12:30. And then in, amongst the 3 o'clocks, Brentford Middlesbrough, Norwich v Swansea, Forest against Wickham, Rotherham against Preston, looking to make it 5 consecutive away wins. But actually, the day before, there's the small matter of Cardiff against Bristol City. Ernie, well, tell me about Cardiff. Got their first home win of the season. Little bit of a hangover from missing out in the playoffs, do you think?
I think a major hangover. The pressure is now even higher because I think overall you can say they were a surprise to go into the playoffs. But then because of that, now comes the pressure of the next season, which I think they started with. They started with a, you know, their strong favourites for the playoffs minimum, and also I think, you know, they've signed, you know, the players, you know, like Harry Wilson, who excellent players, and you're expected to do even more. So I think they've not started strong, they've started just okay. They've lost a few games, which is, you know, not what they want, but I think they're capable of making the playoffs. But I think they're not just hitting their right levels right now, even with the win the other day. But they've got good players. I mean, Harry Wilson, who I've seen closely with Wales, Liverpool, and now he's at Cardiff City. I think he's just got so much ability, so much quality. His left foot is a wand. I think he gives them a lot going forward. So I think somebody who I think can really, really help them. But I think their biggest problem is going to be defensively, to be honest.
Mm. We should stress, mind you, with 2 games in a lot of the weeks, you know, you put a little run together and suddenly the table looks very different. It's still, everybody's taking points from everybody. Nobody's sort of tearing away with it, especially after what's happened with Reading in the last week. In League One, having lost 2 of their first 3 matches, Peterborough United have since dropped just 2 points from their last 24, including the 5-1 thrashing of Shrewsbury Town last weekend when Siriki Dembele got a hat-trick. Their top, Ipswich Town second, despite losing 3 of their last 5. Charlton have now won a hugely impressive 6 in a row. Sunderland in at the top 6. Portsmouth just outside after 6 wins in 8. At the bottom, Swindon Town have lost 5 of their last 6, and their manager, Richie Wellens, has gone off to League 2. Salford City, his new club, lost in midweek to Cambridge United, who are still chasing down leaders Newport County, who themselves were beaten on the same night at Carlisle United. Managerless Mansfield Town were denied their first win after a 90th minute Bolton Wanderers equaliser, and it's now just 2 points from 33 for bottom club Southend United. What's your interpretation of Richie Wellens being willing to drop down a division? I mean, he leaves a club that he got promoted. They won the title last season, albeit at the end of the curtailed League Two campaign. They've not had a great start this time around. I guess the whole Salford project, if you like, I hate using that word in football, but we should on this occasion. I guess that's really attractive, isn't it? And then from the class of 92's point of view, they've obviously changed their manager a lot and picked people that they think are right for the particular division that they're in. And obviously Richie plays attractive football, and that's what they want to try and ingrain throughout the club.
Yeah, I think that's key. I think the style of football that the manager brings is very important, because they weren't doing really, really bad, you know, under the old manager. It's just, I think the way they approached it maybe didn't suit the owners, didn't suit that class of 92. But I think Richie Wellens is somebody who's starting to prove himself as well. He's done well. But also, I think he's played there, he knows the club a little bit. But also, you know, yes, the project is to try and get up. The project is to move the club forward. And, you know, obviously they see him. And it's an interesting one for him to drop down. You know, Swindon is a good club as well. So I think he's more looking at, okay, I think this is a project that he can get excited around. And, you know, Salford are trying to do things and, you know, quietly. And, you know, maybe he sees that as a long-term thing rather than short-term where he's had success at Swindon. So
it's the first round of the FA Cup this weekend when the remaining 32 non-league clubs are joined by those from Leagues 1 and 2. Friday night, Harrogate entertain Skelmersdale United from the 9th tier. Southend with their wretched league former away at Boreham Wood from the National League. We've got Cheltenham entertaining South Shields from the 8th tier. We've got a sort of fishing port derby, Hull against Fleetwood. Former winners Ipswich and Portsmouth play each other. Leighton Orient, Newport County. Can't help but think of Justin Edinburgh when I see that fixture written down. Salford, Richie Welland's first game in charge will be against Hartlepool. Played each other in 2015-16, but role reversal with Pools now being in non-leagues and Salford being a league club. Darrell Clark against his former team as Walsall take on Bristol Rovers, FC United of Manchester at home to Doncaster, and the battle of the seaside towns as Eastbourne Borough take on Blackpool, one of the top fixtures on Sunday. When this round comes around, or when you're involved in the early couple of rounds, you must have been certainly with Cardiff. Are you absolutely bricking it that you're going to be victim of a giant killer? Do you look at it when you draw one of these small clubs and think, oh no, please not us, don't make it our turn?
No. I mean, the pressure is on you for sure, you know, because you have to win, you're expected to win, and you should do. But to be honest, my approach was always, how many goals can I get?
Seriously, so you looked at it as an opportunity to rack up the figures?
Of course, yeah. I was when, you know, whatever team, and if they're lower, they're in a different division, they're lower than us, or, you know, I was thinking, okay, how many goals can I get? How can I approach this game? How can I get, you know, because what happens is if I get more goals, I get more confident and I get, you know, into that zone of, you know, I get more goals in the league because I scored in the cup. And that's how I used to look at it. So I used to go into a game and think, okay, can I get two? Can I get a hat trick? Can I rack up the numbers? Because if I'm looking at 20, 25 goals a season, then these are the games that I'm looking at and, you know, get a couple of more because that might push me on to 28, 29, 30. You know, so those are the things I was thinking about. And you know, because, listen, of course the pressure's on you, but so it should be, because you're there to perform, and that's just how I approached it. Is, you know, I'm there to perform, so I'm going to try and do it, but I'm going to try and get the best level I can get and get the most amount of goals I can get in that game too.
What a great insight into your mind. Thanks for joining us on the Official EFL podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's it for another week. A huge thanks to Robbie Earnshaw, the other Chris Wood, and Gareth Ainsworth. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.